because you all are here, and it's time to go. Okay?
Let's
so, here we are, ready to rock. And just to give you a heads up as to what's going on, let me just put this control panel on. Here we are in session 3, What and How to Poke Paradigms. And we'll get into that in a minute. Here's what we're up to. Just checking in. There's always going to be a check-in. How are you doing? What are you doing? We're going to take a quick look back at the key agilities, and perhaps if it's needed or useful, and given we have a smaller component, we might be able to do this as well because we have another piece of practice later. Some more subtraction. What makes paradigms hold together? What paradigm shift is really? What are the key challenges to shifting, and what are the consequences of shifting? And then there's eat the elephant, practice time. I think I should have music for that. Practice time. So here we are. If nothing is moving for you, you may be caught in a paradigm. So this is my question for you. How are you doing with provoking so far, or what? You know, and I'm just curious about any one of these three. You know, what are you doing with provoking? What is it you know to do and are not yet doing? So, anything? What's happening out there?
Well, I'm a great provoker. I think
okay.
I switch, sometimes I do it on purpose, just to get a response.
And what's the difference between doing it accidentally and doing it on purpose?
Well, I think about it. I think about what I'm going to do.
Okay.
As opposed to just, I don't do it naturally, I think. I don't feel that I do. I feel that there's always a thought behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't only do it in coaching. I'm talking about in my life, you know,
yep.
Period. If I want a certain response, I go where I know that if I provoke, it will get a response. It might not be the one I want, but it certainly will get one at least.
Right.
It's not always healthy to do it, but it's been something that I think I've done for so long without even thinking about it, knowing what it was. Now I can label it. Now I can see what it is.
Right.
That. I just do it.
Okay. So when it's not healthy, where is it coming from versus the time when it is healthy?
Well, it's
where
not,
is it coming from that sources it differently?
Well, it's not healthy when I'm, when I'm doing it to someone that I'm in a relationship with. It could be a friend or... You know, it could be a husband, a partner, whatever. That's when it's not healthy because it can bring the way you say it and what you do can bring negative responses.
Well, if anyone gets upset, that could be perceived as a negative response, even if it's a client. So I'm just looking to dig in a little bit, if we can here for a moment, so that we can really check into what fulfills when you perceive it to be unhealthy. Is it simply the reaction?
Well, I think when anyone provokes, I think it's, you know, you're stretching, you're challenging, and
mm-hmm.
and I believe I don't know if I'm right, but I believe that when I do that, it's because I'm looking for a challenge to get to a certain something that I want to hear something that I want to hear change. You know, that there's a purpose. It's not it doesn't come because I'm purposely going for a negative response. It's just that I think when you provoke sometimes, and people don't want to be at that point, it creates negativity.
Okay, so I'm going to try and unpack what it is that I've just heard. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, so one thing you mentioned was the component that is really important in masterful provocation that's related to permission, which is without context for permission to provoke, there's a much higher probability that we will, you know, encounter a reaction that we either don't want or that, you know, we might deem unhealthy or negative. We have a lot of movement going on there in the background. If you're setting up your bowling alley, just put your phone on mute for the time, okay? Because your mics are very sensitive. Okay, as you look at it, the provocation element comes from a number of different places. One of them is the distinction between my agenda and what's being called for in the moment. And that's a really crucial piece. In the same way that, yes, children, anybody can be provocative from the generic point of view of the word. But that's not what we're after here. We're after a conscious, at times, intuitive at other times, but an informed by the moment, and it's calling the ideal provocation into the conversation. And that's completely different than what a child might do, which is to provoke to see whether or not they have power, to provoke to get attention, to provoke to feel like they matter, to provoke to get something that they want that it didn't look like they could get any other way, so they're going to do something, you know, all of which we carry over into our behaviors as adults, albeit managed a little bit better, sometimes couched a little bit better, sometimes more strategically languaged, and yet at the same time being sourced in that personal agenda versus what the moment is calling for. So it's our job in the, you know, coaching relationship in particular to live from the distinction between where the provoking is coming from versus it just being a kind of unconsciously automatic behavior. If it's an unconsciously automatic behavior, in many cases it may not serve, and it may well provoke certain levels of upset or kinds of upset that create more havoc than they do benefit moving forward. So the essence of it really in the background is where is it coming from? That's the first place for us to go clear, do our own work on ourselves, with ourselves, so that we can be more in tune with the more transformational or evolutionary provoking that is being called, rather than the normal human needs-based provoking that is essentially being driven. You know, it's almost like the there are moments where one goes, I just couldn't help myself. Well, yes, that means that we haven't attuned to what's really appropriate for the moment. We're on autopilot.
And well, I was speaking more from a personal place,
right,
than a coaching. But I will say, in coaching, when you are challenging direct communication, I think there are times that you do provoke. Many times you provoke, but that is the way it's done. Is what you just said. It's not done recklessly. It's done with thought and permission. And but I think in personal relationships for me, it's been something that I've done, and even perhaps still do it, but with much more thought than I ever have, because I know the difference, and I
yes.
understand that it doesn't really get what I want when it's
well,
all said done.
Yes, it may still get what we want, but again, it's contingent on where it's coming from.
Right, and it's not always in a good place from my standpoint, and it becomes a negative.
Well, it can, yes, it can definitely have that kind of impact. So even in a sense of, in a personal aspect, just as a sidebar here, if the provocation is coming from a loving place, a very supportive place, versus a what one might call the smaller self, my needs not being met place, there's a distinction there even on the personal level. So the more we can play in the provocation coming from a loving place and or the supportive place,
then the negative disappears.
Yes, and people may still be upset. That can still happen.
Yeah.
But the downward spiral doesn't get triggered. It triggers more of the upward spiral, even while it may trigger an impact, an upset of some kind. So it's not to say that provoking won't trigger an upset, because essentially when you're looking at the notion of change, you are upsetting something that is attempting to be solid and stand. You are pushing it over a little bit. And so in a system, in any system, if you're introducing change, it is going to upset the system. It's inevitable. Now, the degree of the, what one might call, negative energy that attends that moment is sometimes contingent on where we're coming from with it, and sometimes contingent on where the people we're engaged with are coming from it, the degree to which they are attached to the not change. This is why it's important for us to have the conversation early on that the context of our relationship as coaches is change. And if they don't get that conversation early on, we haven't established the context that then supports the kinds of provocation that may come out of the interaction. The second part of establishing that contract, you know, the context and the contract, is to have the clarity in the conversation that says, and there may be times in which I am provocative with you. And simply state it up front so that there's no surprises. They don't all of a sudden get ambushed by, you know, us whipping out the provocation on them. We say, you know, is that okay? Because if that's not okay, then we don't really have the right to proceed. So first we need to let them know that it's about change. Second, we need to let people know that we're going to be provocative with them. And that times that may feel, and many of those times it may well feel uncomfortable or upsetting. Now, if they enter into the agreement with us from there, now we have permission to a certain level to engage. However, if for some reason there is a sense that what you feel in the moment is that, wow, I get where we have to go. I get what the conversation is, the question is, the direct communication is, whatever you want to call it. I get all that. And I see that given what I know of this person so far, that may be hugely challenging for them. It's useful to contextualize again that, you know, I have something that may be really challenging for you at this moment in time, or may be challenging in ways that we both can't see. Is it okay to proceed? When you do that, what you get is the distinction between ownership and potential victimization. When they say yes, they are now owning that their commitment to this moment is to call that provocation through you, even if they don't have that language. But if we don't do that, they may just go into victim reactive mode of you doing it to them. And that gets messy, and you know, one always has to clean that up.
So do you do that each time you have a session with someone?
Well, first what I do is they, you know, tend to be that the early session, somewhere in the interview, it's brought up about change and provocative, et cetera. However, do I do it in each time? No, because we're not always going into some deep, really, you know, ginormous challenge.
Right, but I mean, when that comes up, though, that type of...
Oh, when it comes up? Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely do that. Because it's only fair in a co-creative partnership relationship for the one person who sees where we are going to be going and senses and gets it to inform the other.
Right.
Otherwise, we have no place to fall back on if they feel ambushed. Because we will have done that. And it may come very simply, you know, do you mind if I challenge that thought or that position for a moment? Is that okay? It may come very lightly. You know, would it be okay if we played with whether or not that concept was really true for a bit? You know, the language doesn't have to be one that says that, you know, that scares them. And then every now and then say, you know, listen, I have an intuition. And I also have the intuition that what I'm going to present here could really hugely be challenging. Is that okay? You know, are you in a basically when you say, is that okay, you're asking, are they in a place at this moment in time? And if they say no, then you say, okay, that's fine. Let's move to a different place to play. So, Steve or David, any comments or thoughts that are spawned by the conversation I've been having with Molly?
Yeah, I've got some thoughts. This is David. Oh, sorry.
Yep, go ahead.
go ahead, David.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I do much of the same thing while, you know, preparing them, but I'm going to compassionately challenge them in the coaching relationship and set all that up. And there are times where I'll set up the challenge, but then there are times where I won't. I'll just go into it. And,
yep.
You know, feedback I've gotten from clients is that some of the direct feedback stuff, they love it. But there are times, too, where I think I've definitely botched it up, maybe have gotten a little frustrated and just kind of went out of frustration in the provocation rather than really feeling what wells up. You know, usually when I provoke, I get this deeper feeling of it just kind of wells up, or it's very, you know, intuitive thing. And then I can feel how, you know, I can feel the energy of the conversation. It feels like it'll open up, whether or not they get upset or start crying or whatever. It feels differently than if I just kind of like threw it out there and kind of zapped it, maybe because I was a little bit frustrated or something. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So what you're flagging is part of what we're talking about here, which is where is it coming from?
Yeah, exactly.
If it's coming from my frustration, then inherently that agenda is about me relieving my frustration.
Totally.
If it's coming from, and it, you know, see, now in that moment, what can be beneficial, you know, and typically the frustration is about whether the conversation isn't getting anywhere, where it doesn't seem like something in the relationship is moving, whether it doesn't seem like the person is moving, or some way they're interacting with you and you're interacting with them is creating frustration.
Yeah.
The simplest thing to do to address that so that you don't go into a misdirected provocation is to tell the truth. You know, in our interaction right now, I'm just getting really frustrated. about what I keep hearing and what I keep noticing. Does anybody else have that reaction when you're engaged with them? You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're owning your own experience, and it has the possibility of leading to something else. But even if you didn't ask, does anybody else in your life, you know, because there have been times when I've worked with people in corporations where I've gone, you know, I got to tell you, I'm feeling really frustrated with what keeps coming back no matter what I say. And what I'm wondering is, you know, what I'm wondering is that exactly what other people are reporting?
Yeah. And yeah, that's great because it ties into when, if I'm really there, especially if I'm really in my body and using that as a reflector sort of, it reminds me of the portaling, you know, the portaling you talk about, being the portal. And if I recognize that as, oh, maybe this is maybe it's within them some frustration that I'm picking up on, or maybe it's their behavior evoking frustration. Yeah, that's a great point. I didn't really think of it that way. Or, you know, it could be my crap, but in general, I'm pretty good at self-managing. but, yeah, that's an interesting thing.
Well, and it's useful then to look at, because what's happened is that you've been provoked.
Yeah.
And the benefit of it, that provocation, is that it has pointed to some kind of limitation within us.
Mm.
So post the session, it's worth going, what button in me really just got pushed? Because ultimately, if it did, it's my button.
Yep.
So it's a twofold interaction. It is a co-created relationship. So there's benefit if how they're being provokes you to the point of frustration, so that you can use that reflection back to them as feedback. You know, given the way this conversation has gone, I just keep getting frustrated, and I'm not really sure what's up with that. And I'll do my best. I'll, you know, you can even fess up to that and go, I'll look at this later. But I'm wondering if anybody else in your life has the same reported experience with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's being called into the present moment for a reason. Cool. Thanks for bringing that up. Steve, and then Susan, you're in, aren't you? Or who else has joined? Steve is here. I get that.
Sherry's here.
Sherry, hi there.
Hi.
Okay, I thought I saw Susan in as well. Okay, hi, Sherry. Glad you're here.
Hello. Thank you.
You're welcome. I just want to make sure that, because I knew someone else was in, but I didn't know, because it says Gary.
Oh, Gary Bork.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All of Minnesota is in.
It's freezing here.
I'm sure it is. Mm. I'm sure it is. So, Steve, go ahead. And then I'd like to hear from you, Sherry, if there's anything you want to add.
Well, I had a situation. I'm not sure if I'm suited to serve on boards of directors, but because I do ask questions like this, and I'm serving on my second board, and somebody wants me on a third board, and I don't know. Serve on this local chamber of commerce, and I sensed early on that, you know, we were just spinning our wheels, trying to reinvent everything, reinvent everything, and so I suggested to the board last year that we look to look outward to improve the chamber, and look outward for best practices. Now, what are the best chambers in the country doing? And I sensed that, you know, we weren't doing that. And when I said that, you know, everybody kind of looked at me like deer in the headlights. And I had a discussion with a consulting company, small consulting company, two-person firm. All they do is specialize in chambers. So they kind of, you know, they were very generous with their time, didn't charge me, actually gave me a tip that saved us $500 a year on Constant Contact. Constant Contact is free to nonprofits, by the way. And I shared that we were paying $500 a year for the last couple, 3 years. And I suggested to them, you know, let's go looking at best practices. Let's get this little consulting firm involved. You know, they saved us some money, even if it's just a conference call or two. I also suggested having her an executive director, sending her to an annual chamber convention, right, to learn about these things. You know, what are the best chambers doing? What are best practices? They're going to put in the budget. They decide then I got the budget this year, and there's nothing in there. So the new president of the chamber, so we had no leadership. We've also got some other things going on, which I'm not going to go into detail about, but they're saying we don't think we have the money right now. And the new president said, well, the executive director, as far as learning new things, you know, she's working with this chamber and that chamber that's in the same county. I said, those chambers are suffering financially, and they're going downhill. We don't want to be learning from them. And I sent an email last week saying this, and I just said, what else are we doing, or what else are we not doing that's costing us both in hard dollars and soft dollars? Okay, nice what question.
Mm-hmm.
Got no response back. So this woman called me today saying, you know, I don't want you to think that you weren't being heard, but I wanted to talk to you about this as well as some other things. They refused to look outward. So I had a provocative statement, and it was neutrally charged, okay? I don't have an agenda other than I'd like to be the best chamber in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's my goal. So you can't, when you do make provocative, when you do provoke, it can
yep.
come off looking negative. Though, would you say, Michael, the difference is, you were saying if it's personal, that's not a good thing. But so you want to have it neutrally charged, right?
Yes.
Neutrally charged, right.
And neutrally charged is part of, if it doesn't fly, it doesn't fly. I'm not going to then get on my soapbox and pound it into the ground, because that
exactly.
would mean they have to go along with how I see it in order for it to be, in order for, you know, that. So that's part of the neutral charge. The neutral charge is also not out of a reactive state.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. So as a consequence of your statement with them, what happened?
Nothing's
decided that they? Okay, so nothing is going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen, no.
Oh, okay. And has anybody explicitly stated that?
The president today said to me, she's newly elected because they decided to get rid of the old president. There was no leadership there. She danced pretty well around the subject.
Huh.
You know, we've got some financial issues we've got to take care of, but I sense they're not going to do anything. They want to continue on the same path they're going. And I just said to her, you know, I've made a suggestion.
Yep.
I see what's going on. I saw it last year. I see it now. And I'm bringing it up one more time. You know, if you guys would like to move forward, great. If you don't, that's fine too.
Okay, great. So you're on a sports team. You see that the team and the management doesn't want to make the changes that you see are necessary or that you see are valuable. And you don't have an experience that you're being heard. This is a key piece here. or that your contribution matters, do you stay on that team?
I actually said last week to another fellow board member, I said, I'm thinking of resigning. Because they're not doing anything. I mean, they're just staying in a boat that's slowly sinking.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And so with the thought of, and I share this with the president too, so the thought of that I'm considering resigning, does that mean I'm taking it personally?
No.
Okay.
You might be simply identifying a bad fit.
Yes.
See, do you want to be participating with an organization wherein your contributions aren't responded to, regardless of whether or not they change?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? Because there's a big difference. We can be in an organization wherein we think that in order for us to feel valued and et cetera, that they have to change in the directions that we see. That's personal. However, when you're in an organization and you make a contribution and you've laid out some provocation and nothing comes back that says, you know what, Steve, we get the essence of what's going on here. We hear what you're saying. We don't necessarily agree about the methodology about it, but we think that it's valuable. That's somebody worth participating with.
Yes.
But I don't hear that that's what's happening.
Yeah. Correct.
So that's why
now
I
they
ask
value it. Me. They value some of the, you know, number of things that I've done, especially at the annual meeting. I kind of want run a like a little mini workshop, all coaching related. So they love that part. But I think we've just changed leadership in regards to a president. But I'm not sure that the leadership's there to make the tough decisions to get better. So.
So is this organization essentially, excuse me for interrupting, is it essentially the same, functioning at the same level as it was a year ago?
Yes.
Okay. And did you have parts of this to be?
It's in worse shape.
It's in worse shape?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and that's documentable, right? That's noticeable? Yep.
It is, because there were some decisions that need to be made a year ago that weren't made, and it's, you know, it's got us in possible hot water with the IRS.
Okay, good. So,
yeah.
And had anybody raised those conversations a year ago? Did you also raise those conversations a year ago?
I was so new to the organization, didn't know what's going on, but the discussion was going on then about, you know, the chamber's a corporation, and 99.9% of the chambers that I've spoken to are not – they're all incorporated, but they're 503C6s. All right?
Okay, right.
And so I don't want to get into all the details about that.
Yes.
It's just that, I mean, just to get name badges of the directors, you know those magnetic ones that
yep.
you put on your shirt? I made that suggestion this past summer. We finally got them a month ago. And the executive director said, thank you so much. I've been trying to get those approved for a year.
Okay, great. So if you are going to, at this point in time, make a statement or ask a question, what occurs to you to be if this were to be your last contribution via provocation, what would you say? And I mean from the kind of provocation that we're talking about here, the one that is of benefit called forth in the moment, what would you say? What's your intuition say that is the thing that needs to be either asked or said?
Wow.
That's, and I'm not asking you to answer that right now.
Yeah, if
okay?
somebody else on the call has an answer, but
No, they would have
I'm
their
laughing
answer.
Because
but
you and I had a coaching discussion around something like this
mm-hmm.
about a year
so
or so
that's,
ago.
That's what I'm asking you to just consider, feel into.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Because that may be the most powerful one that you have, and you may, in some degree, be holding it back.
Yes.
There you go. So that's, you know.
The provocative one was networking meetings, and I couldn't stand going to them. And we had this discussion, and, you know, the 60-second elevator speech that everybody does.
Yes.
And I said,
yes.
I said to everybody, my ideal client is somebody, is an entrepreneur that wants to guarantee that they never have to come to any one of these meetings ever again.
Oh, what a wonderful thing to say.
Life, like, you helped me, Chris. And I said it, and they were like looking at me like deer in the headlights. But
of course,
you raise a good point in regards to coming up with that provocative question. Yeah.
Yeah, provocative question or a statement that if it was your parting shot.
Parting shot, yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't meant to be like out of like, well, I don't like you, so I'm going to go play elsewhere, parting shot. But it was like the recognition, and this is, again, it's the key is where does it come from? The recognition that says, you know, I'm not a fit here, and yet I feel like there's still one contribution I can make before I go. This is it. And whether it lands in some sort of immediate effect or whether it lands as a seed that provokes a new plant within them and eventually over time it shifts, doesn't matter. But it would be you being true to yourself going, this is what the contribution is. Okay.
There you go. It's solidified in truth and it's authentic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, Sherry, anything out of this conversation before we move on, or shall we just dive in?
Why don't we dive in?
Okay. Here we go. Oh. The statement at the top of this slide, if nothing is moving for you, you may be caught in a paradigm. There you go. With respect to things like this organization, but also invariably, if nothing is moving for you, you may be caught in a paradigm. Okay, just taking a quick touch on the agilities, the power of moving quickly and easily, nimbleness, the ones that are key here with respect to provocation, presence, sensing acuity, provocative inquiry, saying what is. Here's the inquiry that I'm just going to ask you to, you know, write down or put in your background, and as we complete today's session, somewhere between the next week and, you know, or next 2 weeks, because we're not on next week, we're on in February again. Please do, this is a reminder, look for the email that has the new links in it, and please do remember that the recordings are still going to the same place that they have already been going to, the page on the website, not the Instant Teleseminar website, the Masterful Provocation website, or Michael Stratford Masterful Provocation location. Okay, so this is the question. What is not yet moving for you in some place that's important for you? Have that as a background question as we explore this whole notion of paradigms. All right? So, here we go. Hi there, Margie. Welcome.
Hi. Hello.
Hi there. Again, these are the tools, and those MP3s are up there. With any luck at all, we might have an experience of one of these today. We'll see. Seems to have gone different ways. But the gap is the baseline experience. The C is the tool that is particularly useful in helping you and or therefore eventually down the road your clients shift out of the story or the projection of the future or the expectation of how it's supposed to go or how it should have gone and didn't, to shift out of the energy of that into the larger, more peaceful, expansive space of the gap, which is actually outside the sea. And it is very similar to, as you see in the picture, people rolling around the landscape of their life inside this big plastic bubble and thinking they're encountering reality as it is, when in fact what we're doing is that we're living out of interpretations and fabrications of reality as if that's truth. The core technique is about going inside. For example, when the energy is in your body, when it's been triggered in your body, frustration, for example, and using that technique to go into it, feel the energy, not the emotion, the energy of the emotion so thoroughly there's nothing left of it to feel. Typically, what will happen on the other side of the completion of that experience is some experience that's similar to the gap. And I remind you not to feel the emotion of it. The emotion is only the locator. So frustration, you're not trying to feel the frustration fully. Frustration locates it in your body. That's like the radar system. And then what happens is that you feel into the center of the energy. That's why it's called the core technique, center of remaining energy. Feel into that energy so thoroughly. If you're in a highly emotional state, it's useful to hold the image of a hurricane and recognize that the emotions, whether it's crying or that high aggressive energy or whatever else it is, that that's the kind of hurricane winds and storm and all that sort of stuff. Drop down through the center of it and go right into the eye of the hurricane. And if you remember from that, the eye of the hurricane is calm. And then the last one is wait, which is in the absence of clarity, wait. Not because it wants you to be a couch potato, but because what's happening is that by us waiting on that particular topic, that action, that decision, etc., our attention can then shift. If we put that one on pause, it can shift to what the moment really wants you to be paying attention to. But if you force your attention to the first issue when you don't have the clarity, then we're missing what the synchronistic attention is, the alignment attention is, over somewhere else. And we're trying to force clarity when we don't have it, which is tantamount to putting on your bright lights driving down a foggy road. It simply obscures the clarity even more. So when you have clarity, meaning the fog is dispelled, you can drive with decisiveness. When you don't have clarity, it's like trying to force your way through the fog. And then wondering why you bump into stuff, like deer and people and headlights and cars and trees. Okay? So that's the application of those particular techniques. So let's go into a paradigm. There's a number of elements that construct a paradigm. The first one is it's a way of viewing reality. It's a system. It's not only made up of these things, but it births them. And here's a whole list of assumptions, concepts, beliefs. So belief isn't its own system. It is something that is birthed out of a way of viewing the world. Perspectives, values, practices, stories, myths, rules, behaviors, all of this stuff is part of a paradigm. It's a way of interacting with reality. It's not just viewing the reality, it's a way of interacting with reality, and I'll give you some examples of this in a few minutes. It's an established thought pattern, and it has mental models and ways of thinking and strategies, roots of what one might call mental efficiency. It looks to us, it makes sense to us on some sort of emotional or internal logic to proceed in this way, given that we see the world from this point of view. However, it can lead to things like misleading predispositions. We keep seeing it that way, so we expect that X, Y, and Z is going to be showing up. Prejudices, and this one is really tricky, and it talks about it a little bit more down at the bottom, presumed verifications by selective affirmations of predictions. Basically, We make a prediction about something, and we only see the parts of it that validate what it is that we have predicted. And the last part of this paradigm is that it's a philosophy with top-to-bottom ideas. It contains all the ideas from the highest level to the most mundane detail. And it is the heart of confirmation bias, wherein the scientist or the lab experiment person or whoever it is that's looking for the evidence sees only the evidence that they are looking for. You know, XYZ causes cancer. If that's the premise, then they're going to go see that. And they won't see anything else. So here's some examples. First one is Aristotle's universe, but it also became a religious perspective of the universe, that we were Earth-centric. And as we talked about before, you know, it has the assumption that just because my experience tells me that the sun comes up over there and goes down over there and I believe it, and everybody else believes it, that is truth. It isn't. And because of that, it created an entire perspective. It created values about how to interact in the world. If everything is Earth-centric, then we are the most important things in the universe. Everything functions around us. Now, in the second picture, with the natives of Africa, there was a certain point in time when what we were was a hunter-gatherer society. That was the way we interacted with things. It informed all our behavior. People would hunt an area out, or they would hunt and gather things, etc. It was a nomadic series of cultures. And their entire culture would be built upon something like that, the ability to pick up and go and move to another environment if the food source became too sparse. The ways of behavior, how you tested someone, those were all a measurement of living in that particular paradigm. And then last, down at the bottom, is a pigeon, and that happens to be a carrier pigeon. And that's a paradigm that this is how communication occurs over distance. So what we're looking to do when we're working with people is that they're living out of this massive construct of how they interact with the world, and then we're looking to helping them have a shift. And we've talked about the shift, the distinction between shift and a change, and the shift is a fundamental shift in how they are interacting with the world versus simply changing behaviors. These are the particular challenges to shifts. The major one is fear. Identification, meaning this is who I am, my driver's license, the fact about me, my credential, my education, my upbringing, the location of part of the world. This is my identification. This is who I am. I am an American. I am whatever. This contains all of the things that we then identify with, and then we build a construct of reality that we live in. Americans are great. We are the, you know, the number one nation in the world, and then we interact with the world through that lens.
Michael.
You know, or yes, go ahead, Molly.
Are you saying that you can't have a shift without a change?
A shift will produce an entire range of changes.
So which comes
the deeper first? Place is a shift in the paradigm, a shift in the essence of who we are. A shift takes place on the being level. A change will take place on the behavioral level. An example is if someone shifts their orientation from being they shift their orientation to being about health, that's their now new orientation, that's going to affect an entire range of behaviors versus someone who just wants to lose weight and they're going to change the processes by which food comes in and their body handles it, which invariably has people rubber band back and forth about that. So unless they shift somewhere on the inside about their relationship to their own health and well-being, they might make a step toward food, but it won't necessarily stick, or it will be very challenging to sustain and require a lot of energy and attention. A shift toward one's health and well-being will also illuminate focus on people's sleep, the kind of people they interact with. Beyond just food, it might have them focus on the environment they live in, the kind of job they're willing to now take on, the any other substance that they may do, how they manage or handle their emotions. So a shift has a much deeper and at the same time a much more global impact than a simple change. Think of it like the shift, like the impact that goes on as food, different kinds of food and things change in our body and reflects out through ourselves versus simply putting on different clothes. Changes are like wearing different clothes. A shift is something that is an internal and organic piece, and it ripples out through everything that is related to that paradigm.
So it comes from a different place.
Absolutely.
And it takes over. In other words, it's a mind and body experience, whereas a change could be just a mind experience.
It's typically a mind, body, spirit, emotional, whatever you want
right.
to call it.
Right.
It's a combo plate. But more importantly, it'll show in those areas, but there is something that is fundamentally different in how that person relates with the world. You saw some of this happen in people after 9/11. What happened for a number of them was what they encountered was that they encountered a massive poke in the paradigm of, I have all the time in the world, the universe is an ordered place, and I can just wait to take on the things that are really, truly meaningful and important to me. Many people spoke about how difficult it was, or thought it was difficult, to have coaching clients right around that time because people were they were so challenged by the ripples of that. Well, actually, there are a number of people whose businesses thrived because people were going, you know what? I got it. Life really is random. All that time I've been saying that I could just, I can be with my kids later on in my life. Uh-uh. Not going to do that. Because I could be snuffed out tomorrow by some event that nobody could have seen. All those people who said, I'm waiting for the time that's appropriate for me to go ahead and build the business or take the kind of adventure that I want to have in my life. There's a major shift in their relationship to time, to the world, to what was deep and meaningfully important to them. And it happened on many, many levels. It was one of those prompts for people who are going, I've always wanted to open my own business making cupcakes. Bang. Poke in the paradigm that says you can afford to put that off till some other time. Nope. That was a fundamental paradigm shift. The country of America went through a paradigm shift. There had not been ever an attack in this country on the 48 contiguous states' soil. what happened was that the United States had been, to some degree, living outside of the experience that the rest of the world had been having. Terrorist bombings here, there, and all sorts of stuff. That was their daily experience or their yearly experience. We didn't have that. When that happened, it actually brought us more in connection with how the rest of the world has been experiencing the world for quite a long time. We were kind of living in a bubble. And it broke it apart. So we'd been identified with that particular way. We've been, the other challenge is to shift is roles. We get identified with a role. We play those roles out. Those roles have historical things, whether they're generational, family, familial, etc. And yet, guess what? That's not a who we are. It's a what we do. And the last and most important challenge to the shift of a paradigm is if I don't interact with this world in this way, see it, everything that I have based and founded my life on, I have no idea what will be on the other side. I don't have any idea that it will be beneficial. So the unknown is, fear of the unknown is one of the most enormous challenges to people making shifts, period. So, now is the time to make the shift yourself from where you are to where you might be with masterful provocation. One of the places is, for you to look is the two yous, the two different yous. The you wherein masterful provocation is an organic, effortless expression of how you interact in your coaching. And the one who is thinking about how to do it and learning about how to do it and considering it and has concerns, etc. The one where you shift from having any concerns about it at whatsoever to it's simply an intuitive showing up. And by the way, I just want to take a check with a few people. What's that picture? What do you see?
Oh, it's two different pictures.
I see six pictures.
Ten. There's definitely ten in there.
Yes. And what I see are dots. A bunch of dots.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, shifting from a hunter-gatherer to an agronomy. Major shift in the planet. Nomadic relationship of actually, when it really comes down to it, a fluid interaction with the environment. To an agronomy, which is a master of the environment, meaning I'm going to impact and change the environment. And in fact, we did. That was the first place we introduced climate change, cutting down trees, rerouting water sources, changed the heat of an area, introducing more animals, changed the levels of methane. It's like it. There was a massive change in how this world survived. Completely new skill sets were necessary, new ways of interacting. We went from being a mobile world to a static world. Settlements grew up, etc. Huge paradigm shift. No. Another paradigm shift that's behind all of it is a shift from fear to living from love. That's probably the biggest one we can do. Living from a sense of the reactive self to the sense of the presence and connection with the universe and love as the way of interaction. Living from an earth-centric universe to a sun-centric universe, and I suspect that there may even be other shifts there. Shifting from communication that is limited by how long it takes for a pigeon to fly from Sparta to Athens to almost virtually instantaneous communication, and not just connection, but the mass of information that's available and the nature of the information that's available. The technological shift from organic to inorganic as part of it. Massive paradigm shift. Once again, the provocation source is the gap, the experience of that sense of self, that larger self that is playing in the game with us or playing the game through us. Sanyama is an experience, let's see, yeah, we'll come back to this one. When in doubt, rather than force the provocation, wait. So we have a little practice opportunity. I'm going to, I'd like to have one person who's interested in having a paradigm shift that will make a significant difference in your life. And I'm going to play the role of a coach simply to get clarity, and then I'm going to go around the virtual room and ask you to ask either a question or a statement using the sensing acuity, the sense of what is. And if we, I'll guide you, guide everyone into the gap before we do that so that you can be tapped in. But you'll use provocative inquiry or saying what is to plant a seed for a shift, support a shift that you already hear that's in progress, or have it transform right in this moment. And then I'll help course correct and recalibrate based on what the client reports has happened. Okay? So who's up to play? And by the way, this can happen fairly quickly. Who's up to play?
It could be about anything.
Anything.
Okay, I'll go. I'll volunteer. This is Steve.
Okay, so you and I will interact. Let me just have everybody experience the gap, and then you and I will interact. I'll just get some clarity about what the real issue is, if that's okay with you. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll see what happens after that. Okay? So what I'm going to ask everyone to do, unless you're driving, is to close your eyes. And as you close your eyes, you'll notice that a couple of things will happen. One of them is that my voice may become a little bit more present. Sounds in your own environment may become a little bit more present. You may just notice those things. Nothing to do about them. Just notice that that's what happens. You may also notice that your sense of touch might be a little bit more heightened. You might notice temperature. You might notice a breeze, if that's what's going on. You might notice your body in the chair or whatever surface you're resting on, your hand touching your other hand. You may notice that. Again, nothing to do about that. Just notice that that's what happens when you take the sense of sight offline. You may also notice that you have thoughts. And they'll come and go, much like clouds in front of a blue sky on a partially cloudy day. They'll traverse across the sky. And in fact, they may even seem to come out of the sky. And those thoughts, those little thought clouds, emerge from this background of silence that is very similar to the sky. It's massive. It's always there. And it's alive. It's not dead. And yet, it's quiet. And we tend to notice the activity of thoughts more than we notice silence. and that's natural and normal. So I'm just going to ask you for a few seconds here to just notice your thoughts going by. There might be many, there might be few, they might be in a rush, they might be slow. There might even be thoughts about thoughts. And now if you allow yourselves, you can also notice, simply by a shift of focus, you can notice that background of silence that the thoughts are emerging from. Doesn't mean the thoughts will necessarily disappear, they'll come and go. But you'll be more aware of the silent background. As you feel into that silence, you'll feel things like calm and peace and vast, infinite sense of space. Lots of other words may occur. So while you're in that space of that, I'm going to ask you to just listen. Let the sensing that comes out that is far beyond your sense of sight and hearing and taste and touch and smell, the one that includes a natural knowing, just put that on, feel into that, and I'm going to interact with Steve now to get to what this nature of this shift is that he sees for himself, and let's see what's going on there, and then I will ask you each for either a question or a statement, not a dialogue, but a question or a statement that is somehow related to this shift. Okay, Steve, let's talk.
Okay. My cousin Bobby is 44 years old. He's in a hospice with inoperable cancer, and he's basically waiting to graduate to heaven. He doesn't have much time left. Some cousins, he lives in the tri-state area, Westchester County, where I'm from. I live up in Syracuse, 4.5 hours away. And I felt uncomfortable about going to visit him just because of how awkward I'm going to feel. So I called him this past week. Have a conversation with him. It was a fairly short one, about 15 minutes, and he wasn't doing well. He was emotionally, he wasn't doing well. One word responses to any questions. I felt awkward, not knowing what to talk about. Asked him how he was feeling, so most of my family lives in the tri-state area, and some cousins have gone to visit him. But predominantly not. So I'm going down there this weekend to see him, possibly for the last time. So what I'm looking for clarity on is, I'm sensing walking into that room, meeting with him, and it's going to be awkward because I've never met with someone where they know and I know that they're not going to be here much longer. So I guess I'm looking to be shifted in some way where I'll show up in the best way possible for him to have a great experience regarding this last meeting. And
so,
also for me to feel comfortable regarding it, because it's awkward. It's the first time I've ever experienced this before.
Got it. Okay.
Okay.
So, actually, that's a pretty clear statement of what it is that you're seeking to have shifted. There's nothing else clearer about that than I hear needs to be present. So, what I'm just going to ask everybody to revisit that experience of that silent background in the gap, wherein the thoughts float by, but they're not the most prominent thing. There is nothing in this scenario that needs to be figured out. There is only the communication that is awaiting through the portal called you. Okay? And so, if there is nothing in the communication that is there for you, don't try to force one in order to fulfill some notion that you're supposed to be provocative. If there is nothing, there is nothing. So into this pool of silence, I'm going to ask a question. And I'm going to ask this question, and I want you to drop it into that pool of silence, into that silent background, and simply see what emerges with respect to Steve and the shift he's seeking. Okay, here's the question. What communication is to come through me that will most serve Steve in the situation he's facing with respect to this visit? And whatever you get, you get. So let me just find out from someone what landed, what popped up.
This is Sherry. Tell him you love him.
Okay. Great. Tell him you love him. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. This is Margie.
Mm-hmm.
What came up for me is, Steve, what if this had nothing to do with you?
Hmm. Okay. Good. Anyone else?
This is David.
Yes.
Steve, I wonder if instead of thinking about how you can show up for your cousin, if you might consider instead the question, what would you most like to communicate that you care about to your cousin?
Okay. Anyone else? We have a lot of movement going on. Could you just hold still for a few minutes here? Anyone else? And if you have nothing, you have nothing. Go ahead.
This is Molly. What I'm feeling is that it's going to be okay.
Hmm. Yep.
It's just going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. So, Steve, as each of those pieces lands in you, what's kind of moving around?
I think the part about what if this wasn't about me?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I'm thinking. It's how am I going to feel? And so that's a nice transformation. What if this wasn't about me? Then again, what is it about?
Okay. And then I have a question as well, which is, what needs to move inside you so that you can be fully present and accepting of whatever happens, no matter how it goes.
Yeah.
And then you may not have an answer for that at this moment. If you do, you do, but
I think just having the intention that that's a good question. I mean, having the intention that that whatever happens is going to be the outcome is going to be perfect in its own way in the moment.
Yep. And everything that people mentioned is part of supporting that. Because the background piece of this had to do with the concern about the unknown.
Yep.
How should I be? What's going to happen? Or it's going to be awkward. What do I say? What's he going to say? What's going to happen? Is he going to, you know, what? You know? And the background concern of it is about the unknown. And it is about being in optimal relationship with the unknown.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, you know, I've never experienced this before. It's just
feels
extremely awkward. You know, they know they're not going to be here very long. I know they're not going to be here very long. Yeah,
and the unknown is that you haven't been here before as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as human beings, that's one of the least favorite places we have on the planet. It's the unknown.
So I want to embrace it. You know, I want to...
Yes.
I do want it to be a meaningful, special moment for him.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, sorry to bring up such a downer subject, but you know it's
No. It's a beautiful example.
Okay.
It's a beautiful example, and absolutely perfect. Thank you. Okay. So now what you see on here is exactly one of the key things for the people that you're working with respect to paradigm shifts. What's needed is courage. You know, what makes a muskrat god is musk. Courage. As the coach in the interaction, it ain't about you. I have the power, I can provoke them. And you probably all felt that it didn't feel like it was about you as you were either making a statement or a question. Yes? You just felt it sounded like it was just what was there to say or ask. Does that make sense for people?
Yeah.
I could feel the collective energy towards Steve and what he was facing. So it's up to you from here. You can practice, or you can hope something stuck just out of listening and reading, and good luck with that. So I want to go back and touch one thing, just as an anchoring. I mentioned Sanyama. Sanyama is an acronym for silence, awareness, notices your answers manifesting automatically. That's what that one is. However, and it's an ancient Sanskrit word for that, actually for that same process. It is the moment where after the experience of the gap, you drop a question into the pool of awareness, so to speak, or God or source, whatever, and that answer comes to you, through you, from somewhere beyond your intellect's thinking about the appropriate strategic solution, no matter how oblique or odd it is. So that's what you experienced as I guided you first into the gap and then into dropping the question into that pool. And you can use that technique with your clients as well when they're facing something and they just don't know where to go. You can go to the cosmic, URL and put in a Yahoo search into the question box or ask.god, whatever you want to call it, and get an answer. And if you get the answer, if you don't get any answer, it means there's no information available. Okay? So we're a little over, and I'm mindful of your time. I do want to ask and see if there's anything that anyone wants to say as part of completing today for you. And first and foremost, I want to say thank you to Steve for bringing that heartfelt peace to the call.
Definitely. Thank you, Steve.
So out of today, first thing I want, not from you, but for you, is for an experiment to occur to you for the next couple of weeks. And one more reminder that we're not back again till February. Please do look for the email signifying the link to click, and so that you can do that. However, do know that the posting of this call and the PDF for it will go up in the same regular place on the website that you've already been going to. The only thing that changes is access to this seminar. Okay, so what's the experiment? You don't have to answer that right now, but I do request that you design yourself one out of today's call or anything previous in the other sessions. Anything anyone wants or needs to say in order to feel complete with today?
Just, Steve, thank you very much for that moment. I appreciate it. It helped.
You're welcome. We appreciate it over here as well. You know, we, as a person who leads these things, I always appreciate when a collective human sense or people's sense of their humanity shows up, and you bringing it in a very human way presenced our humanity in a very human way as well. Who else?
Well, I know for a fact, this is Margie, that I definitely got a lot of power from going into the gap and sort of coaching from there, I guess.
Yeah. That's you as portal.
Yeah.
Instead of you as container. Much more stuff comes through the portal than can possibly come out of the limited human container construct called me or you. Because it's much bigger. Who else? Going once? Going twice?
Well, when you say, Steve, again, when you say an experiment, can you say more about that, please?
Yes, design an experiment for yourself that's going to help you take this session deeper. may even help you provoke your own paradigm shift around something that's constraining you with respect to your coaching or with respect to masterful provocation. Design an experiment. Play with it for the next couple of weeks. See what you can set yourself up to both illuminate and potentially even shift. Does that help?
Yes.
Yeah, cool. So, one last time, anybody, anything else to say to, in order to feel complete?
This is David. I'm tempted to design the experiment of not only playing in this gap space in coaching, but in life. I mean, the more that I'm accessing this space overall, the more it'll just happen naturally in coaching.
Yes. Absolutely. It becomes the background context that is just regularly present.
So I feel kind of selfish doing that, but because it's
oh,
like,
heck
it's
no.
When I feel that gap in something that's coming up for me in life, then it just makes things easier to wait or, you know, wait to decide or not decide, or it decides for me, sort of.
Yep.
Very awesome and curious experience.
Yes. And what it does, and it's not selfish at all, it's actually probably the place of most service. Because you will be coming from, as some people have said, the highest good, the larger self, the God source, whatever it is, you'll be coming from there in your interactions more than you'll be coming from our conditioned responses and our reactions and our history and our baggage and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
That's not selfish at all. It's actually capital S, selfish. In a different way.
Yeah.
It's not little as selfish, it's big as selfish. That's cool. Okay.
Thank
you all for coming to play. As always, your presence makes this event. It can't help it. So thank you, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay. You're welcome. Bye, all.
Bye.